We're on, dude.
We're recording?
Rock and roll.
Welcome to Mustard Ayonnaise. I'm Matt.
I am Richard.
And we discuss things that capture our interest in the entertainment industry. Most of the time, it's movies, video games, TV. I don't know.
Anything that entertains us.
I was just going to ask, would you consider video games the entertainment industry?
Yeah, of course. Multi-billion dollar entertainment. You
know, does Entertainment Tonight ever do stories on video games?
Every once in a while they do. Not that I watch it that much, but I'm almost positive they did a profile of Fatality, the big video game
guru. Well, 60 Minutes did one, too.
Yeah, I know. Actually, it wasn't a bad profile.
I watched 60 Minutes. I don't watch Entertainment Tonight. Can I say that any snootier? I bet I could.
Yeah.
I haven't seen Entertainment Tonight since I was a kid.
Well, I don't even know when it's on. I know I've seen Extra every once in a while flipping the dial. It's just amazing how vacuous it is.
Oh, it's insanely vacuous.
But every once in a while, you need your vacuous fix.
That's not where I get mine.
Uh-huh. So what's on your list, dude?
I saw An Inconvenient Truth last night.
Oh, what'd you think of it?
Last Saturday night at a 10:30 screening.
Cool.
And every so often, you know, you wander into a theater and you're the only ones there and you're thinking, is this the one? Is this the one where I get to see a movie by myself,
really?
By ourselves?
Saturday night and it was...
10:30 at Alderwood, the new Alderwood screen.
Wow, that's... But that's stunning.
Of course, it didn't happen that way. We had three other people come in.
Yeah.
So five people total. And on one hand, it's, you know, you kind of want to see more people in because I'm rooting for the film. But on the other hand, it did get into wider distribution. It's not just in the art house guild. Yeah. It's actually in the mainstream theater.
But it got into wider house. It was wide last week.
I know.
And so it sounds like maybe the interest peaked. That maybe it's not building.
Could be, or maybe that's just not a Saturday night date kind of. Anyway, it was a pretty good movie.
Yeah.
As we had been led to believe, it really makes you wonder if you were going to make this type of movie and essentially film a PowerPoint presentation.
Yep.
How would you do it?
Yeah.
And the choices the director made, I think, were pretty good. The bits where it bogged down and got just really plodding and slow for me were the ones where it was like Al Gore visiting his the ranch he grew up on, because his father was
a tobacco farm.
Well, it was a tobacco farm and a Holstein ranch.
Oh, okay.
You know, when his father wasn't a senator, they were on this ranch. You know, and I understand why they did it. It's, you know, Al ruminating on the river and what seems rapid to us is ridiculously fast to the time frame of a river, and how you really need to stop and take a breath. And
I'm just thinking about the last Mustard Ayonnaise, and you brought up the word ruminate, and I somehow heard the word ruminant, and I thought of cows chewing their cud, and it's on a Holstein ranch, so that's where my mind directly went. I'm sorry, I digress. He was ruminating on the ranch on the river.
And I understand how it fit in, but to me it was just
Were they just padding it out, basically? Otherwise it's too boring?
I think so. Because it's not all the PowerPoint presentation. It's also Al, you know, you see Al typing on an airline, in an airline seat, improving his presentation. Or, you know, he's on the phone talking about it. Or he's, you know, narrating to the camera, you know, when I lost the election, that was a tough time. And I decided to make the best of it by concentrating on this again and starting to give my talk again and trying to get awareness going. And so it's not 100% just this presentation.
Was it depressing?
A little bit.
That was my issue with it. I mean, I don't know if I said this on a previous podcast, but
it's
one of those issues I'm just depressed about, and I don't want to go in there. I feel like I'm fully aware of, sort of, and I just like sort of, I don't know, it makes me feel awful.
Well, and, you know, to some degree, you know, like I came out of there thinking, well, I'm already doing quite a bit in terms of being as efficient as I can. You know, I don't drive a gas guzzling car. I don't drive it needlessly.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not, my light, the lights in my house are not on all the time. I've got a time you know, a timed thermostat that's not heating the house when I'm not in it. You know, I'm pretty well insulated in my house. I'm not buying products that have a ridiculous amount of packaging, or, you know, needlessly buying things I don't need just because, you know, the marketing told me to. Yeah. So I feel like I'm already living pretty efficiently. You know, just the same, you know, I feel like, okay, I should write my senator, write my representative, and let them know I think this is important. But, you know, we're already in a liberal area, so we already have fairly, I don't know actually what the progressive voting records are of both of our senators and our representative.
Well, one a little more than the other, but depending on where you are in our area, we have notoriously in Seattle the most liberal senator or representative in our little area. It's not quite as much, but basically we're in a liberal bastion. We're in one of those little
there's not
things.
A whole lot you and I can do.
Yeah. We can just support them. Thank you for voting for the things we want you to
but,
vote for.
Interestingly, you know, the movie ends, and it says, you know, here's what you can do to help. You know, go to this website, climatecrisis.net. And I haven't gone there yet. Yeah. I assume there's a list of things you can do, but then as the credits start to roll, there are other, it progresses through a list of things you can do. You know, you can buy a hybrid, you can buy compact fluorescent lighting. You can, you know, so I thought that was a really good idea. So you don't leave the theater completely depressed and despondent. You're like, okay, there are some steps we can do. You know, here's what I can do to solve this problem.
Yeah.
So I actually thought that was a really good way to do it. And beyond that, you know, there's one of the charts at the end, and it's saying, you know, here's our growth in CO2 emissions that's projected. But if we are able to if we increase the CAFE mileage standards on cars, that would reduce it by 2%. And there's like this list of 10 things that you can do, and all of a sudden the CO2 emissions are back down below 1978 levels.
Yeah.
And so there's that. And anyway, it was, in terms of it being a movie, I thought they did a pretty good job. And Al Gore is fairly engaging, although my girlfriend commented she was expecting him to be more engaging than he was. So maybe her expectations were set a little higher.
She's expected somebody's replaced the robot of 6 years ago with a human being.
You know, and he wasn't even that bad. It's just the media decided he was, and that was the story they chose to run with. And
I'm just joking.
So, and now we have the decider. Thanks a lot, media.
The decider. You know, you were mentioning how deserted it was. I saw a movie at the same Alderwood Theater. Oh, wait, no. Was it at the 16-plex or the 7-plex?
Yeah, the new
big one. So I saw Prairie Home Companion the night before there. I was actually stunned at how packed it was. In fact, it was a full house. We got there thinking, oh, we can just pull in any time. We'll skip a couple of the credits. We get in there. We're stuck in the, you know, the crazy row up front where your head's turning. You know, the row that you like to sit at when you're a kid and when you're an adult.
I never liked to sit there when I was a kid.
It wasn't so bad.
I've only sat there once, and it was, we had a friend that we were over in GameWorks, and we were playing video games a little too long before the theater, and he's like, oh, it'll be fine. And we wander over, and we end up seeing Payback front row all the way over on the left.
Yikes. So it was actually not so bad, but it was packed, and I was going, you know, there's hope for it yet, because when they put that movie theater in, they sort of claimed, okay, this will be our, they actually said that we're going to show mainstream movies, but we'll be able to show a little bit more of the artier fare, and maybe once a month they would show something even mildly arty in there, and I would go, oh, that's their artier fare. But Prairie Home Companion seems a little more urban and elitist, kind of, for lack of a better term. And it was packed, and I found that kind of refreshing. And the people loved the movie. I mean, it was an audience that clearly went to see this, knew what they were getting into. So Cool. Made me feel a little bit better about the little area we went into. So anyway, and here's my review. I liked it. I thought it was it's a good second level Robert Altman movie. It feels very much like a lot of his early 70s, you know, Nashville, Brewster McCloud, those kind of rambling multi-character movies. And it was an awesome mix. You couldn't get a better director for what Garrison Keillor was trying to create when he wrote the script. The only person I really didn't like was Kevin Klein, who was playing this basically, there's this fictional character on a show called Guy Noir. So he played like a real life Guy Noir, this detective on the show. And Kevin Klein can be very amusing, but he can also not be amusing when he's trying to be amusing. And here it was, there was a lot of physical shtick that sort of worked. I really like Kevin Klein. I think he's an engaging, cool guy. Just didn't totally work for me in there. But ultimately, it was an extremely fun movie that really kept you engaged and laughing along. It was awesome to see Woody Harrelson. I haven't seen him in a long time. He's such a funny, cool dude. Lindsay Lohan, it's so weird. She's clearly a very good actress. And it's so weird that she's like this super supernova celebrity, completely messed up, maybe drugged out, maybe this and that, maybe anorexic. But you see her in a movie like this and you go, wow, if you didn't know any of that other stuff, you just think, wow, what a great young actress. And you wonder what the hell is wrong with her. So anyway, good movie. I'm actually really glad I saw it in the theater. So
right on.
Love Robert Altman. And it was weird to think. I was thinking about Robert Altman. Man, the dude, I'm like 38 now. And he started making movies. MASH, his first movie, he was like 3-4 years older than I am right now. So it gives you hope yet.
That's your still hope.
It gives you hope that maybe there's many cool things you can keep doing for an extremely long time. Because he's clearly as at the top of his game now as he ever was. I mean, his last several movies, like Gosford Park and this one, they're and some aren't as good, but he's clearly at the top of his game. And he started making movies in his 40s. I think that's really cool. You just worry every time you hear, like, he couldn't attend the premiere Prairie Home Companion because he had the flu, and you're going, yikes, for an 80-year-old guy, that's not the time to be getting the flu, but hopefully he's got more movies left in him. So anyway, it was a pretty good movie. I really enjoyed it.
Cool. Nacho Libre came out this weekend.
Came in second in the box office, 30 or 28 million bucks.
And I want to see it, but I don't have the immediate need.
Geez, I wanted to see it until I read some of the reviews.
The reviews didn't put me off. And basically they're saying it's very simple because it's the same director as Napoleon Dynamite.
Yeah.
And they're saying it's the same sweet, the characters are sweet.
Yeah.
That they're, you know, they're very
innocent.
You know, it's not a cynical take on
it. Isn't it like a PG movie? Not even PG-13, if I'm not mistaken.
I don't know. But you know, and that's all fine because based on the previews, I'm not even expecting a tremendous, nonstop laugh riot. That was a really tortured description there. Jack Black just seems very amusing in this role.
Well, that was Ebert's criticism. He said, wow, Jack Black is just on his own, is just an incredibly funny person. And his lead paragraph, something to the effect of, you have to work really hard to make him not funny in a movie. And somehow this movie accomplished it, he was saying. And I think what he was saying is it had a feel sort of like Saving Silverman. Remember when that movie came out? Well, it was like, I remember getting excited. Oh my God, it's Jack Black. And I can't remember the other guy who's so dang funny.
Jason.
Jason, what's his name? He's funny. But no, the other guy, the guy who was in That Thing You Do and a bunch of other movies. You know who I'm talking about. Anyway, these funny guys, Jason Biggs, I think. But the other guy. And funny guys. And they're in like a Neil Diamond tribute band. I mean, funny premise. And it was clear the director just let Jack Black go wild, and it was way over the top, and it didn't work at all. It was not funny, and that's what Ebert's point to this one was, and it just sucked whatever interest I had in the movie. I'm definitely going to wait to see it on DVD right now.
I don't know. I think it still looks good enough, but
I don't know. I said it did too until I read that and like one other review, and I'm going, wow, they were saying things that where they've said things in the past where I go, yeah, you know what? I usually have that same kind of thought, but I don't know. But I'll tell you, have you like read Ain't It Cool News lately and seen, you know, some movie will pay to do the banner ads on Ain't Cool News? So it's Nacho Libre the last couple of weeks. Clearly they're sending them a bunch of money. And to their credit, it hasn't seemed to really particularly affect their take on the movie. But you know how what's his name? Harry has always a cartoon on the corner that usually relates to something. So this time it's a picture of Harry Knowles as Nacho Libre. And then there's this midget wrestler, Mexican midget wrestler, that hops on him and starts wrestling him. And at one point he hops on Harry Knowles' face and starts thrusting into him pelvically. I don't know how else to describe it. It is the creepiest thing. It is the grossest thing ever. I honestly
never pay attention to those.
Dude, you got to look at... I always hate them. I find them really disturbing, not funny, not cute. But this one especially is just over-the-top creepy. You got to check it out. It's like, what was he thinking? Well, I mean, I think they're trying to imply that he's trying to pull him over, but I can't imagine the artist was doing anything other than messing with Harry Knowles. But anyway, yeah. I digress.
Although the last time I paid attention to one of the Ain't It Cool banner ads was the real Cancun.
The real Cancun.
Do you remember those? Because it was hard body chicks in swimsuits.
Yeah.
They were just, look, see our movie. Here's what you can expect. And
that, it didn't pay off at all. That movie made nothing. I remember when that movie.
God, it was fun to look at.
That was the weirdest thing. That movie was incredible when it came out. The thing, they filmed it over the course of 1 week or a week and a half. I actually went to Cancun. We landed in Cancun 3 days after that movie was wrapped because we went to some of the locations. We came home 5 days later, and 3 days after we got home, that movie was in the theaters. That movie had a two-week turnaround. They pointedly did that where they were going to edit the movie and put it out while spring break was effectively still going on. So they filmed it early in spring break, but we were still down there and you saw some of the crews cleaning up and we went down to this one place where they filmed a bunch of the stuff. And it was so weird to have a movie be in the theaters like a week after it was filmed.
Seems
it was
like it would take longer than that just to make the prints. But
they did it all on digital video. They were editing as they were going.
I can understand you can edit something like that super quick. Because there's no narrative through line, really. But
I kid you not, it was done in two weeks, and it was incredible. Because I remember us going home and going, "Oh, dude, the movie literally." And they had advertised it as that fact way ahead of time. They had the whole game plan, and they were banking on using the actual spring break as the hook to get people in, and it didn't pay off at all because it made no money, and it was apparently a horrible movie. But you're right, it did have the requisite hot chicks in it.
So you sent me a news article that the PlayStation 2 is currently outselling the Xbox 360.
Right here in the U.S.
And you had some
I thought that was incredible. PlayStation 2 is, what, like 6 years, 7 years old at this point?
I don't know how old it is, but it is bizarre that people would still be... And, God, is it parents getting it for their kids not knowing?
Well, I think from one perspective, they're just gone. Well, there's still thousands of great games out there, tons of great games out there for PlayStation 2. The machine is relatively cheap.
In fact, I was at a party a couple weeks ago talking to a guy who works at a game developing studio. It was at Holly's housewarming party.
Yep.
And he was talking about how really it's at that you know, the longer time goes on, the more studios and game makers have the ability to really harness the power of the console.
Yep.
And it's really only towards the later years that you really start seeing stuff that just ekes out every last bit of processing power. And so yep. You get some really good looking games, but usually by that time, the next generation is out. So he wasn't really advocating a position longer intervals between consoles, but it was interesting, you know, because once the new generation comes out, the developers are aiming for that. You know, nobody's making games for Xbox anymore, really. And it's hard to believe. And so why would you buy an Xbox right now, honestly, unless it's fairly cheap and you get enjoyment out of the pre-existing games? No, Xbox. Okay. Or because PlayStation 2 right now, you're still getting... Well, in theory, some games.
I think the person who linked this, I think I found it on Dig, was basically saying, oh, this doesn't bode well for Xbox because all these people are still buying a Sony product, which means they'll probably buy the next one. I'm thinking, why are they assuming that? Once the new Sony comes out, like you're saying, they'll stop developing for this one. I'd see no reason why they're just going to leap right into the Sony 3. And are they? And have they decided? I can't remember. Are PlayStation 2 games going to be playable on the 3?
So, you know how they did it? They basically took an entire PlayStation 2 chipset or motherboard and throw my pen across the room and include it in the PlayStation 3. Mm. So it's
a fairly expensive solution,
yeah. But it guarantees 100% backwards compatibility.
Which they're having problems with the Xbox, apparently.
Well, the I don't know that they would call it problems, but they've been working on the backwards compatibility list via software and doing it through, I don't know if it's emulation or what the issues are there. But I think we're approaching 75% backwards compatibility. And their goal was always, we'll do the popular games, and then we'll get around to doing the rest of them. Which, you know, I'd have to look at the business case for each, but that seems fine with me. Why do I care if...
Have you been following the PlayStation 3 one much, or what kind of networking capabilities are they having in terms of being able to play?
It's built in, finally.
So is it going to be...
And they're going to do their version of Xbox Live.
Because if there's one thing that Xbox seems to have gotten right, it's massively Xbox
Live. Just about
Xbox
everyone
Live.
Agrees that Xbox Live was really well executed, and you know, they keep improving it.
And apparently, way better now. And with the new Windows Vista coming out, apparently a lot of these capabilities, it's going to be... New games are going to be able to utilize that for Windows. Although I found it funny last week they announced that so you're all going to be on the same system and you can see what your friends are playing, but if you're playing Halo 2, for instance, on the Xbox, you can't play against people on the PC version of Halo 2, even if it's the same code. And my gut feeling on that is because the PC, it's a easier system to utilize, and they would spank the people if you're playing against them. I heard this. They showed on a PC Gamer video podcast. They brought some people from the official Xbox magazine, their sister publication, who were all Halo fanatics. And then they had the people from the PC Gamer, a couple that played Halo, a couple hadn't played it for a while, and a couple that never played it. And they played it against each other utilizing the PC control systems versus the Xbox people used the console controls. The PC people spanked every single one of them. They won like 2 out of 3 games against the Halo machines. And I think that's their concern, is that there just wouldn't be fair competition, at least in some games, because the PC games are sort of inherently better for
that could be
those
it.
Kinds of things.
And, you know, I've heard that as well, that when you're using the keyboard controls, it's much more accurate. But I have never been that great at the keyboard controls for first-person shooters. Granted, I wasn't into PC gaming, so I never got into Doom or Unreal or any of those. Was Unreal even on the PC?
Unreal started as PC.
Okay, I was never exposed to that really, so I never got good at it. And I'm fine with that, because I'm good enough with the Xbox controller that I'm fine.
Well, I just love Microsoft's renewed commitment to gaming. I think everything I heard about Vista is going to make it an awesome gaming machine for a million different reasons.
And Sony's going to build their own version of Xbox Live, but they're not going to charge for it, they say.
Really?
Which is, because Sony's original plan, they had a networking thing that you could buy separately,
mm-hmm.
And then that they were going to let the developers support whatever online, and which, aside from the SOCOM Navy SEALs, I can't think of anyone that actually utilized that or set up their own online system.
Oh, that's a recipe for disaster.
Well, it's a recipe.
Because you're going to go to all these, you're going to go to random ones and hope it works effectively.
Well, you'd assume the developer wouldn't do it unless they could do it effectively, but it's incredibly expensive.
Yeah.
Because you're setting up these data centers, server farms, you know, and the costs involved are pretty significant. And
I'm surprised they're not going to charge money for it.
Well, it's because they're trying to undercut Microsoft, but they're going to lose a ton of... I don't know if Microsoft's making money on Xbox Live. I would guess not.
Yeah.
But just based on... It's gotten really expensive to build server farms these days. Like, I know, but...
Well, there's that article. Did you read that article about Google?
Yes.
Down there in Oregon with that secret, you know, tens of thousands of computers all lined up. And it's like, wow, Jesus. And Microsoft's plan to like literally build their own sets of farms all across the country that are literally 10 times bigger than what Google existing has. It's like, holy geez.
Anyway, I think Microsoft has enough of a lead with their online service that it's going to take a long time for Sony to catch up. I'm sure they're capable of doing it, but everything Sony's done really makes you wonder that it's going to be done well.
Yeah. This is true. It's amazing how it took about 10 years for them to just turn their name, even though they have some really, product saving things. They've just, as a corporate business venture, they've really kind of ground their name into the ground.
Well, there's a couple. There's still some TVs they make. I mean, that are visibly superior to the competition.
Well,
but they're visibly more expensive than the competition. You're right.
Well, that was always the way, but it used to be. I mean, it used to be. I'm getting a Sony.
It used to be much more widespread. You know, the Trinitron name.
I'm getting a Trinitron, and it's different, and it's very specific. And now it's just a commodity. You know, they're and you're right. They are marketing. They have that one line that what is it, Aquas or something?
No, that's Sharp. Bravia.
Bravia. That's right. Where they're marketing this and that, but you know. It's basically a commodity, and that's the high-end commodity.
Well, the super nice bleeding edge ones aren't so much a commodity, but the difference between them is really shrinking.
Yeah,
I mean it's an XBR liquid crystalline silicon version, which costs like the 50-inch is $3,000 and the 60-inch is $35,000 or $4,000, and it's a beautiful, beautiful picture compared to anything else. But, you know, there's always stuff coming along, and then you're like, well, is that picture worth an extra $1,000 versus something else?
Yeah.
Anyway, next thing that you sent me was the Spider-Man story.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. They had like a big press conference or anything, but I don't follow the superhero world, so you can tell me about it.
But, and this is in the comic books.
Yeah.
Not Spider-Man 3 movie related.
Yeah. No, it was, it was that they basically, apparently there is major problems in this superhero world where some person in the comic books world, the government has decided to label all superheroes as weapons of mass destruction. So Spider-Man decided to come out as a person to pull off his mask and say who he is so people could look at him as a person or something like that. The thing that I found amazing was how much incredible play that got in the mainstream media. It was like, wow. Literally, it was on the Today Show, Good Morning America, everything. It wouldn't have occurred to me that would have been that big of a deal, but some very canny PR person got that really talked about quite a bit.
There's a couple things that occur to me right then, and one is a couple weeks ago, the Daily Show ran they did a little thing where it might have been the Today Show. They were showing the Today Show interviewing David Lee Roth following his expulsion from the radio show, and it was basically like a 6.5-7 minute piece of this guy talking to David Lee Roth, and Jon Stewart was like, that's what you call a slow news day.
Yeah. They picked the right day for this. Well, you know what is funny is a lot of the news outlets, they chose as their headline, as a joke leading out as the teaser, famous superheroes coming out. They kind of implied they were coming out of the closet. Like he was gay. And it was so weird.
Spider-Man has had some of the hottest girlfriends in the comic book world.
Well, what was so weird was so many of the news articles teased with that I got the distinct impression it was a very canny PR agent that pitched him on that thing. And,
happened a couple of weeks after the whole Batwoman lesbian
exactly.
thing. Which that was news is completely mind-boggling because... Yeah. They're always digging around in their vault for some old character they can trot out. You know, they'll make a big deal about, hey, we've got this new series. Sales will be great for the first couple issues. Then it'll do its decline, and then it'll suck, and then they'll cancel it after a year.
Yeah.
And that's just sort of the way the comic industry works. And for it to get that much press, and there are already a few gay characters, not a whole lot, but...
Yeah.
And so... And so I wonder if Marvel decided to pump this up as a reaction to that, or if it was always their plan. But it's this ongoing storyline called Civil War, and it pits a bunch of the good guy characters against each other because they're split on the issue.
How long has this storyline been going on?
I think it was a month or two.
A bit like what's going on in the X-Men movie
Yeah. I'm into comics, but I generally don't get a lot of the mainstream books because they just didn't they stopped capturing my interest a while ago.
And so you're talking about you're into the more the niche books and stuff.
Well, niche books, and I also tend to follow a few writers around.
Yeah.
You know, anything X writer does, like Neil Gaiman, anything Neil Gaiman does, I will buy.
Yeah.
Just about anything Peter David does, I will buy. And there's a few other, you know, I can't think if there's any superhero books I get just based on. And part of the problem is if you're a Batman fan, if you're into Batman, there's 10 different Batman books that you can buy. So if you choose to buy them all and be a completist, that's quite a bit of money you're out. You know, because
comic books
are
following
like,
different storylines and different.
Well, it's a combination
of realities.
Some of them are, you know, some of them are interwoven, so they're all sort of. You know, all of these books take place in the same continuity. And then there's Detective Comics, which is sort of like before Robin came into the picture. And it's just sort of Batman being more detective-y.
Yeah.
And so though Detective Com or God, is that what it's? Is it Detective Comics?
Yeah, that was his. That was the original Batman. Before there was Batman, it was called Detective
Comics. No, Legends of the Dark Knights. That's the one I'm thinking of. Legends of the Dark Knight is sort of outside of the rest of Bat continuity.
Yeah.
You know, but the same, you sort of have the same problem with Superman and Spider-Man. There's all these books. So if you decide to be a fan of Superman or Spider-Man, you have to collect a lot of books. They do all these crossovers to expose you to the different books to make you buy them. And then they do these things where it's company-wide crossovers. It's a gigantic company-wide event. Nothing is going to be the same. Civil War, things will be different. Or, with DC, Infinite Crisis.
So is that like all a corporate decision? Like,
well,
let's do it and the writers get ticked off about that, or are they excited to do that?
It depends, because it generates interest, and sometimes writers are into that, and you know, you get all the writers together and they hashed out together, so they're more interested and more vested. But sometimes it's, if you're a writer on a small book and suddenly the word comes down, oh, by the way, you have to incorporate this big event into your book somehow. Who cares what you were planning? You're going to do it anyway.
Yeah.
That can be irritating. But, you know, I refuse to get sucked into those big events. And I'm like, oh, okay, big changes. We'll see.
Yeah.
Kind of,
well, it's interesting how those things get picked up. What gets picked up in the main press? And I always thought, wonder how the real fanboys look at this, like, wow, why the hell is that a big
exactly.
story? Because that always surprises me sometimes when I'm really into something and some little thing gets picked up.
So, you know, Spider-Man's one of the larger characters, so his revealing himself is somewhat significant. But, like, Daredevil has been outed by one of his foes,
yeah.
and he's constantly saying, how could I be Daredevil? I'm a blind lawyer. Hello.
Yeah.
And so it's...
Yeah, I guess, and truly, and Spider-Man actually is, at least in the last 10 years, the most successful, you know, movie icon.
And to me, it sort of began with the death of Superman.
Yeah.
Whenever that was 10, 15 years ago, it was like, Superman is dying. And everyone in the comic book world is like, why are you making a story out of this? We all know he's coming back in a month.
Yeah, exactly.
We all know DC is not killing off their their cash machine. Hello. It's, anyway, moving along.
Moving along.
I've got my Kingdom of Heaven DVD, the super duper special edition.
Oh, yeah?
And I finally finished watching the documentary stuff yesterday.
Yep.
And very thorough. I haven't listened to the commentaries, but fairly interesting in terms of really showing you the editing process of going back and forth about, are we doing a longer cut with this child storyline or are we not?
Yeah.
And, you know, throughout they're editing two versions of the movie, one with and one without, which is pretty interesting. And, you know, going back and forth with the studio and talking about they're getting notes that, well, of course, every time you show a movie to a studio, they always say it's too long.
Yep.
And, you know, how do you service the storyline? And in this case, just about everyone agrees they should have made a longer version.
It's a way better movie.
Which
I haven't seen the
longer version. I haven't actually watched the longer version yet. Mainly because I haven't had that chunk of time where I can sit down with my girlfriend and say, we're watching this. And it's just, it's interesting to watch that process. And also for the first time, a top tier director, Ridley Scott, is saying, you know, it's like when you tell a joke and by the fourth time, it's not funny. And by the fifth time, you don't ever want to hear that joke again.
Yeah.
But when you're editing the movie, you see the movie this many times every day and you're sick of it.
You lose complete perspective.
I've heard that before, but I've never heard a real top-tier director express that sentiment before.
you lose total perspective where you're at within the movie, and it's hard to like step out. That's why you hear some people bemoan, oh, test screens, whatever. And it's like, boy, if I was a director, you lose complete touch of whether your comedy is funny or whatever. You need to have an audience tell you if your beats are working or not. You know, the thing about that you're pointing about editing is I watch stuff like that and I go, man, how does the Academy Award even, how do they even give out a best editing Oscar? Because they, unless somebody's telling you the story of what choices they make, how can they even tell? Usually they go for either, it just becomes, they check off like the top movie of the year and it also gets editing, or it's one with a really flashy theme, but how do they do that? Like for instance, or it might be something with a unique structure like Pulp Fiction, but Pulp Fiction, I think the structure was Quentin Tarantino's idea, not the editor's idea. So I sometimes wonder how the Academy Award even can give somebody an editing Oscar, because it seems like a random thing.
Yeah, it seems pretty arbitrary.
Because a movie might have been completely saved, and you totally attribute that to the director, but it's actually the editor that did that. How do you know?
And then I wonder, literally, could you or I, how much of a transition would it be for us to edit a two-hour project?
Yeah.
Because you and I have both done 5, 10-minute, 30-minute.
I've done an hour one, but it's not quite the
but
same
But even then,
one.
It's not the same, because you're not dealing with a five takes yeah. per scene yeah. Or you're right, really a narrative storyline. You and I have done like fundraising type
yep.
cutesy videos where we're dealing with one take. Yeah. And really when we're editing, it's like, what's the best way to present it instead of what's five to anyway?
I know. And the thing about editors is one thing you realize is going into it, especially in the modern thing, everything is logging the clips correctly, going
exactly.
in, spending a
and
lot of prep
so
time.
So laborious.
Exactly.
And God, no, there, I can't. The most boring job in the world has got to be logging footage.
Ugh.
Anyway.
But that's the only way you can edit. Otherwise, it's a disaster. So,
well, if you're doing a, you know, sort of a seat of your pants thing, if you're there when it's being filmed and you know enough yep. to know, okay, I'm taking the fourth take, and you make a little note to yourself yep. instead of the exhaustive details of every take. You don't care about take three because you already know you're doing take four.
Yep.
But that's very seat of your pants, because if something happens, like the take four footage is destroyed, then you suddenly need the other stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, so some of the trailers that I've seen recently, World Trade Center, I saw for the first time.
Oh, really?
And it actually was fairly well put together. And I thought it was a good trailer. It made me interested in the film. And I've forgotten Nick Cage was in it. Yeah. And Nick Cage looks...
looks like a fireman.
Looks good. No, he's a cop.
Oh, I thought he was a fireman.
I think he was wearing a police. No, he's wearing a police. Yeah. Well,
yeah, maybe yeah. you're right.
But they might have been police wearing the fire gear.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. One of the two. Anyway, it looks pretty good. In comparison to, I saw the Ghost Rider teaser, also starring Nick Cage, which
I liked it. It seemed
look,
over the
so.
Top. I liked it. Him riding the motorcycle up the building.
Yeah, it did seem. I don't know. That's one of those. That's a really hard character to bring to the screen. It's not all that popular character. Every 10 years or 5 years or so, Marvel brings back Ghost Rider in a new series.
Yeah.
And like the same thing before, everyone buys the first issue and then it peters out because it's dumb.
Isn't there like a planned Silver Surfer movie too? Because that to me strikes me
slate.
As the weirdest one ever.
You can't be faithful. You can't really be visually faithful because it's a naked silver guy
yeah.
on a surfboard.
Exactly. And it's like, what can you do? And this one here, at least just visually it seemed kind of cool to me. But I know Nick Cage has always been wanting to
yeah,
be
he's
in a comic
a, he's a huge comic book fan because
he was going to be Superman.
Didn't
for
he
all
name
that.
His kid Kal-El?
He did. And he was. And remember, he was all into, he was going to be in the
yeah.
Superman project that Kevin Smith was working on. And he ended up, he would like go around dressed in Superman tights. And it's kind of funny knowing Nick Cage that somehow they didn't make that happen. You know, they didn't push that thing through. So
anyway,
well, you know, that somebody did a review of early review mm-hmm. of World Trade Center on Ain't It Cool News, and they didn't like it, but reading the review, it's like, as Harry Knowles or somebody pointed out, boy, they didn't even have, I don't even think they had like temp music in. The effects weren't done. Thinking that's a movie that's got to be the complete package. The guy, it wasn't really affecting, he was saying, and the performances were dumb. And I'm thinking, boy, music adds so much to something like this. So how can you really review it?
Also saw Little Miss Sunshine, which is...
that's like the greatest trailer. That's a really good trailer.
It's pretty good. It's sort of a... It's a traveling movie with a dysfunctional family, which sounds very formulaic, but looks very well put together. You got Greg Kinnear, Tony Collette, Steve Carell, and a pretty good-looking beard. Alan Arkin was hysterical, asking the grandson, "You getting any? You need to be getting some of that young stuff."
Alan Arkin, he's a great guy, and he's really morphed into this awesome character actor, too.
Anyway, that looks like a pretty funny film. Yep.
Yeah, I looked that though. Man, it's a situation comedy, basically, but you can just see that it's going to be well written and it's going to be very well acted. And that was one of those independently financed and produced movies that got picked up at Sundance for like $10 million. And I wouldn't be surprised if it pays off. I mean, it looks
And then on the
great.
Other side of the spectrum for me, Strangers with Candy, which I never watched the series, but it's got Stephen Colbert in it. And I saw Amy Sedaris do a sketch for Jon Stewart that they showed on Oprah, which is like the only Oprah I've ever seen was this 5-minute thing where Jon Stewart was on it. And it was just bizarre. I turned on my TV when I got home and it was on NBC and I'm like, oh, look, it's Oprah. I hate Oprah. Oh, it's Jon Stewart. I'll stick it. Anyway. And so, but I watched this trailer yesterday. This looks so staggeringly unfunny.
You know, the show was unfunny too. I got what they're trying to do. They're trying to make fun sort of old after school specials. And the whole point to this is like a former crack addict lady that goes back to high school to get her degree, but I could never get the tone right of what they were doing. It was not a good recreation of after school specials, although they had the moral thing, you know, there was always a morality that somebody learns, but it just, I didn't get it. And I know there was like a whole cult behind it. I've seen Amy Sedaris interview and she's cute and funny. And I see her on this thing and she's so disturbing looking, this like puss face thing that she does. And it's bizarre that I don't like it at all. I was stunned when I heard they were going to make a movie. I'm going, wow, that thing, boy, did anybody even watch that when it was on Comedy
and
Central?
I have a feeling that they'll probably, a lot of people will probably see it because Stephen Colbert is in it, but you know, it's going to be 5 minutes total screen time.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he was a pretty significant character in the show. He was like the second lead, but he's like the principal or something, but I don't know. It just, I just want to avoid it. And it's one of those things where I almost feel bad about it because I like Stephen Colbert and I'm going, I mean, they're trading on his name quite a bit with this thing. So,
Who Killed the Electric Car?
Oh yeah, the EV one,
which I had heard about, and wasn't all that interested in, but the trailer was a fairly compelling trailer. And obviously, when you put it in front of The Inconvenient Truth, that's your targeted audience. And I'm kind of a car guy, you know, I was aware of the General Motors EV one, and I really wasn't. When they stopped making it, I think they cited lack of consumer demand, or it wasn't economical because they lost money on each unit. But apparently, according to this movie, there was this whole backstory or perhaps conspiracy involved in them, you know, ending the leases and crushing them all.
Oh, exactly. And then they went and wrapped them up and crushed them all. And then the existing owners were like, freaking out.
I do remember that the existing owners were really upset.
They're going, hey, what if our car dies? We need to get replaced. And the GM was going, that's the point. They were actually basically saying, we can't sustain that, so we got to get rid of them so you won't have something to make repairs.
And this movie is sort of positing that the oil industry was very, played a big part, and GM was vested in you know, everyone's invested in the oil industry and the oil economy and having things based on that type of motor.
I have a natural aversion to conspiracy theories.
Especially lefty liberal conspiracy theories, because it sort of plays into the stereotype of, oh, look, Michael Moore is being a crackhead again. Actually, no, if you pay attention. But...
Exactly. And that's why sometimes even though I have an aversion, I do like watching some of these. And when I heard about this one, I thought, I definitely won't see in the theater, but it's like, yeah, if that comes on DVD, I'll pick it up immediately.
It looks pretty well put together, so we'll see.
Cool.
Interestingly, you know, sort of Al Gore brings up in the Inconvenient Truth movie about economy standards and how, you know, China has higher and tougher economy standards.
Fuel economy standards
than we do. You know, we cannot sell American cars in China, apparently, because our you know, our economy standards are below theirs. And, mm-hmm. you know, Detroit has always said, oh, we can't give you the performance and safety that the American consumer demands, you know, if and meet those same standards. Meanwhile, Toyota and Honda, who are meeting higher standards, yeah. are taking them to the cleaners. And, you know, F you Ford, F you GM, when you go out of business, I will weep, you know, I will shed no tears. Anyway, I just ranting there. Another, I saw a trailer for Heart of the Game. Have you heard about this?
Oh yeah, I've been hearing about it tons. That
I film, hadn't heard about it at all.
Filmed just it's down the road from us at Roosevelt High School.
A documentary filmed in Seattle about yeah. high school girls basketball team. And I don't know if it centers around this one girl who was really good, but there was some eligibility questions. And
he kind of recruited her. It's a law professor at the UW, University of Washington.
It also seemed centered around him because he like had no coaching experience and he actually looked pretty funny. Like, you guys go out and play, and when you come back, I'll have some words of wisdom that'll make you win and something
well,
like
no,
that.
Well, no, actually, I said law professor, he's some kind of professor, but he had like a couple daughters that had played and they had an opening. So he went and applied for it and got it. And he was a very inspirational coach. And he recruited this one girl and they follow her course. And apparently at some point she actually gets pregnant. Because she gets pregnant, they don't want the Washington State Interscholastic Association doesn't want her to play. And the team votes, you know, we may have to actually to forfeit if we let her play while this case is going through the courts, but we're going to play anyway. And they take all the way to the state championship. And the cool thing about it is, and why it's kind of inspiring to me, even though I haven't seen this, is this was a guy with a little video camera mm-hmm. about 5-6 years ago, just starts showing up to these games, starts filming them, saying, hey, do you mind if I film you? He had no idea that this coach was going to take his guys to the state championship.
Girls.
He had no idea that there was this girl that they were going to recruit that would have this story. And that's like the best kind of movie. And it's kind of inspiring because there's a lot of stuff that I'll see or you'll see in your life and you go, boy, that followed over the course of time would make a great movie, and it just shows this is what this guy did. And it wasn't great equipment he was using. He just made an incredibly compelling story that is getting very wide release. And that's what's cool, too, is yeah. a documentary can get released in hundreds of theaters these days.
U.S. versus John Lennon also looks pretty interesting.
Oh, I haven't heard about that. Is that about his drug thing in the 70s?
It's about, you know, he was so outspoken about being against the Vietnam War that apparently the government was literally, you know, had opened an FBI file and they said had started deportation proceedings, which I had never heard that before.
Yep.
And you know, it looked like they had G. Gordon Liddy in there saying, you know, that he was a concern.
Oh, yeah.
And it's fun. What struck out at me is some of the things Nixon was saying about the Vietnam War could easily have been said by Bush about the current cluster.
Exactly.
And he really just like, oh, you know, we have learned no lessons.
Oh, of course not. Look at the Dixie Chicks and some of these other people savaged.
It looks like a pretty interesting movie.
Cool.
And because I am pretty unaware of that aspect of, I know John Lennon was a peace activist. I didn't know that there was this much government pushback.
Yeah.
That they were that concerned about him. And can you imagine if they had actually deported him? Could they not see the backlash of that?
Well, of course not. And they're not, but they're
that's amazing.
But at the time you would have had a lot of people supporting it and whatever, but and what's so crazy is John Lennon loved America. He loved New York. And it's mm-hmm. just kind of, it's so funny how in retrospect, it seems like such an all fire asinine thing. It's sort of like, and it's cool when politicians, some now they still kind of reflexively defend attitudes like that. And there's some that are even conservative. Like I noticed George Pataki said about a month ago, decided to revoke any conviction that Lenny Bruce ever had and said, we need to honor this guy. And I'm thinking, why can't more politicians do that and go, you know what? I don't care if I'm a Republican or Democrat. What happened then was stupid. And if there's like a parallel today, yeah. so be it. But, and John Lennon, boy, I mean, we owe him an apology for even having or his memory an apology for even having an FBI file on a guy that was just speaking out like we'd expect of anybody who is a vocal, prominent person. We'd expect them to. I mean, he wasn't American, but we'd expect anybody who was an American at heart to think that way.
And I agree. Yeah. And the last trailer I saw was, this is interesting because it made me want to see the film, and it was a Woody Allen film.
Oh, he's got it. What's his new one? Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
With Hugh Jackman.
Yep.
And it took me a minute to recognize him, Hugh Jackman, and I am so glad that he is getting, that he's not being typecast. He's done a really good job of saying, I'm an actor, and I'm a stage actor. I'm not just Wolverine.
Yeah.
I am so happy about that because he seems like such a cool guy.
Yeah.
But Scarlett Johansson looking hot.
Dude, did you see Matchpoint?
I didn't. And I hear that was a very good film.
First of all, Woody Allen has not really made a good movie in a very long time for me. But Matchpoint was an exceptionally good movie. And Scarlett Johansson was smoking hot in this movie.
Scarlett Johansson is hot. In fact, we haven't done our special feature in months. Is Scarlett Johansson been naked
this week? And apparently, no, but you do have a sighting of a possibility. And in Matchpoint, she's making out in a field and it's raining, and then there's some other scenes, but of course there's nothing on that front yet.
Anyway, it looks like a pretty good film, sort of a combination murder mystery with some weirdness in it. Anyway, it looked pretty good.
Cool. Was it New York or London? Because I know Woody Allen supposedly is really like
pretty London. Sure it's London.
London. So that's cool. Woody Allen sort of morphed into a London filmmaker.
Yeah. That's all on my list. Cool.
Nothing else on my list.
And since I'm in a rush, should probably wrap it up. I have completely failed in two respects. I have yet to get the last two episodes up on the server. Or
this time
plug
it's,
them in.
Well, it's sort of my fault because no, I screwed up typing them.
Well, yeah, but I've had access to the correct things for like a week now, and I still haven't done it. And I completely failed again to check the email address. Although since last week's promise to do so still hasn't actually been heard by anybody.
Exactly.
It's okay. But it's because... I was in a gigantic rush this morning.
Dude. Well, you get married in 2 weeks.
I owe it to the people. Yeah, but that had nothing to do with that.
Where are you going on your honeymoon again?
Whistler.
Oh, that's cool.
Because thanks to our plan of waiting to the last second to find a place to go, everywhere else was booked.
Yeah, but Whistler's cool.
Yeah. It's during the summer, so it'll be interesting. But
I'm not.
We only have a couple days off apiece. That's our huge limiting factor. We can't go somewhere for a week.
Well,
so, as
you're driving through Vancouver, let me suggest a couple places on East Hastings Street you can stop. Actually, you'd have no interest.
We're not going through Vancouver. I made that mistake the last time I drove through Whistler and had no idea that the freeway just stopped and turned into city streets.
Well, it basically does. But if you take Highway 1,
making that
and
mistake
go
again.
It,
oh my God! You talk about getting pissed. It's when it's like 10:30 at night on a Friday and you're trying to get the Whistler and you're suddenly in Vancouver city streets and you're like, freaking Canadians.
Well, the good news is it won't help you now, but within 4 years that the whole highway to Whistler is, they're building it all out.
I look forward to getting the economic backspill from that without having to go through the BS of hosting the Olympics.
Exactly.
All right. I am Matt.
I am Richard.
Thanks for listening.